Hello, and welcome to the H in HR podcast, where people discuss the most important aspect of human resources, the human aspect. Now, here is your host, Ricky Baez.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the H in HR podcast. My name is Ricky Baez, and folks, we're just going to dive straight in. And the reason we're going to dive straight in is because today we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics. And I'm not going to say what that is yet. I'm only going to talk about the person who we're going to interview today, which I have the great pleasure of being able to watch her speak at Disrupt HR 2.0 in Jacksonville this past year, which, by the way, 3.0 is coming soon. Francis, the team, and I are working on getting those days locked down for Disrupt HR Jacksonville 3.0. Stay tuned for that information and when you can register for your tickets. But the person that we're interviewing today, her name is Cassie Bruce. So let me tell you about Cassie. Now, she is the Director of Corporate Health. And as a Director of Corporate Health, she leads teams that develop research-based workplace wellness programs, unique to each employee's culture, objective, and workforce. So at the end of the day, folks, she helps organizations engage, empower, and elevate their employees by prioritizing a healthy workplace culture and employee well-being. Folks, especially this being the week of the fourth year anniversary of COVID and how that happened, because it's at that, I think you can think back and remember, it was on Friday the 13th, 2020, when everything really started to hit the United States. We've known about it since December of 2019, but it wasn't until March of 2020 when it really started to affect America's workplace culture. So I'm really happy that I got the opportunity to connect with Cassie and have a conversation about how to make mental health a priority in the workplace. Check it out. Cassie Bruce, how in the heck are you, my friend?
Wonderful.
It's been a minute since we last connected. The last time I saw you, you were speaking at Disrupt HR Jacksonville 2.0. What were you talking about then?
Managers. It was the one thing that could ruin your wellness program or something like that. But it was about how managers impact our well-being.
So the one thing that can really impact our wellness at work, and that is what? Working over 40 hours? Working 40 hours? Not taking a lunch? Sometimes. What is the one thing that hurts employees at work?
I mean, sometimes it's all of those things, but I would venture to say that your relationship with your manager has the greatest impact on your well-being at work.
And you know what? And I love that. I love that because a lot of people talk about, okay, but look, it's this week, I think, this week of March is the fourth year anniversary of when things just went straight to heck back in 2020 with COVID. And I like to say, because it's hard to believe it's been 4 years. COVID has a bachelor's degree. That's how old it is right now, right? It's got a bachelor's degree right now. And, you know, and obviously there's a lot of great examples in COVID about mental health, about making sure that's a priority. But that's for everybody. But if you start to chip away at what happened back then, yes, frontline medical workers, first responders, absolutely. But you know who I found caught the brunt of everything? Frontline leaders in HR.
Yeah.
Because before everything went to hell, we didn't know that we had to mobilize X amount of employees nationwide to work from home. We didn't know how to do that with a limited budget. Not only that, when the leaders up above in the ivory tower, when they're, you know, putting all this thing together and they, you know, they give it to the lieutenants to go make this happen, the feedback they get from the employees, it kind of stops at the frontline employees and HR. So that's why I was happy to hear that kind of that outlook on wellness. So I'm going to shut up. You tell me from your perspective, what's the most important thing leaders can do or not do to make sure wellness is a priority at work?
Mm-hmm. I think it's prioritizing the human component of people. Like if you think back to COVID, you're talking about like, we didn't have the technology necessarily that people needed to work remote all of a sudden. or we didn't have processes in place. But what about the life stuff that was happening? People had their kids at home. People were worried about maybe elderly family members that are like more susceptible to sickness. There were all these extra concerns in life. And then on top of it, you're supposed to figure out how to do your work in a very new way. And as a manager, you know, manage X amount of people and their life and their work while keeping your own stuff together. So I think just remembering that people are human and seeing them as human first, because I don't know about you, but in managing someone, like within a given year, I'm dealing with, not dealing with, but the things that come up in people's lives are they lose a pet, or they find out a family member is sick, or they themselves have a mental illness or new diagnosis, or there's a death in the family. Like, I think back over the past year, and I've probably had multiple of those things come up on my own team alone. So it's, how do we see people as humans first, and then help them to optimize their strengths, manage their life outside of work, and rise to their potential?
Why, Cassie, why? Because look, you're making perfect sense. And it almost sounds like common sense. Be careful with that term. It almost sounds like everybody should know this. Why is it so easy for leaders to forget that they have human beings working for them?
I think it's the pressure of needing to meet goals, needing to meet budget, needing to get work done. And then I think we all learn about how to be a boss, not through training and development, like we probably should. Like, how many people do you know actually have legitimate training of the skills of being a leader prior to having a managerial or leadership position? It's like 10%, according to a lot of studies.
Yeah,
it's like 1 in 10. So a lot of times we learn how to be a boss from bosses that we've had. Yep. And sometimes that may not have been the best example.
So, I'm sorry. You got my spine tingly there. Say that last part again. You learn how to be a boss from your what? Your previous boss?
From a previous boss that you've had, whether a good or a bad example.
Talk to me more about that.
So I'll give you my own experience.
Yeah.
I, like, the first manager position I had was right out of college. I actually started in marketing and communications, and there was enough work coming in that they're like, we're going to get you an assistant and you're going to be that person's boss. I was 23. So I had very little like life experience and I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah. So I did, you know, what I thought I should do. I was very stringent and tried to be extra professional. I think I went too far to that end of the scale rather than being relatable and personable, because you can still get stuff done and care about the person for who they are. And you can still be relational without crossing any boundaries. So I think that's something you learn over time, but ideally you'd have some kind of support or training or development to teach you how to do those things.
So that's a good point, because yes, there is theory and then there's application, and there's a huge difference there, right? And I bit down on what you said there, because that I wasn't expecting that. For everybody listening, Cassie and I did not talk about the ins and out of what we were gonna. We knew the topic, but not the ins and out of it. So she kind of caught me with that, and because that's happened to me too, Cassie. Now, I'm going to throw this out there. I don't think I may have talked about this in an episode of HR Talk years ago. But I was working at a government agency, and the HR leader at that government agency, man, let me tell you, he did or didn't do some things that were like, God, is he a good leader or what's happening? So anyway, I was going through my master's program over here at Rollins. In the master's program, the class HR leadership, we were reading the book From Good to Great by Jim Collins. Have you heard it?
Yeah.
So I'm reading that book, right? And I have it on my desk. The HR director, I'm not going to mention his name, but people are going to put two and two together. He walks by and he sees that book. Now, remember, all of us already think that we don't think he's doing a great job at all, because he doesn't do anything. He's just quiet. He just lets things happen, right? So anyway, so he walks by my desk. He sees the book on my desk and he's like, I love that book. And I looked at him like, what? Like, I love that book. And I'm thinking maybe he heard about it. No, he read it, because he's like, the level 5 leadership and the hedgehog concept. It is great. And I'm looking at him like, oh my God, It's not that you don't know what you're doing. You read, you've got the information, you just don't care.
Yeah.
And that gave me a whole different outlook. And I remember thinking, when I get to that level, he's taught me a valuable lesson on how not to be a leader. So I like what you just said there. So sorry, I went on a tangent. It just caught me.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's so true.
It is. It is. So okay. So you were talking about how being a leader, sometimes people in a leadership position, that is pretty much the anchor of people's burnout at the office, right? It's, but how so though? I mean, can you give me some examples of how, I mean, everybody has an idea based on their examples, but from your perspective, it's how do you see a leader being that much of a burden on an employee?
I could see it one of two ways. So one of it could be like the work itself, not properly managing like the workload you're giving someone or knowing they're overworked and not actively advocating to get them help or to help get the team to pull together to help. I think as leaders, as employees, we're responsible for communicating to our leaders, hey, I need help. Hey, this is what I'm working on, and it's really adding up. And as leaders, it's our responsibility to advocate and respond and make something happen.
Got it.
And then the other side of that is the relational piece. So you talked about your manager who you said he was really quiet and like wouldn't address anything.
Nothing at all.
And like, to me, avoiding conflict is one of the most detrimental things we can do to employees' health as a leader. If there's conflict there, whether it's between us and the employee or on the team, if we don't have the confidence and the tools and the guts to address it, everybody's going to suffer, especially that employee's mental health, because you're always walking on eggshells, wondering what expectations are or if you're doing a good job. That open communication, even when it's really tough, is probably like the number one thing I feel like we need to have as leaders.
Yeah, but Cassie, but okay, so I'm going to switch hats real quick, okay? I'm going to be the devil's advocate. And I'm going to be that one leader that says, you know what, Cassie, that's all fine and great, but we have a business to run. We got to be profitable, right? Are you telling me I have to put my employees' well-being above profits?
Yes, and your profits will improve because you do that.
Oh, there you go.
We all go through difficult seasons. Okay, so I will tell you, I've had 2 kids. 3 months postpartum, not my most productive season of my life, but I'm going to bounce back a year later and be where I need to be, probably sooner than that. But we do as leaders have to respect that, you know, people are going through life. People are going through tough things where production might dip for a month, but they can come back.
But you're going to have, but you're always going to, and by the way, when my wife was pregnant, I gained all the weight. I don't know how that worked, but that's what happened in my family. Cause I'm like, okay, how am I gaining everything? But you know, but you're still going to have leaders who, I mean, I guess I'll say they don't really care. It's, they're more direct. They're less compassionate and they keep focusing more because you said it yourself, pressure, the pressure they get to perform. How do you get a leader to focus just as much on the well-being of their employees as they should for whatever directives their boss gives them? How do they balance that?
I think it starts with themselves too, because if you're feeling that pressure and you're just passing it along to employees, you're obviously internalizing some of that. So maybe as a leader, you don't have the tools or the practices that you need in place to process that stress, to be able to be more level-headed and compassionate as you're, you know, communicating with employees and trying to get stuff done.
Gotcha. Okay. Can I give you an example what-if situation?
Yeah.
Because, of course, you love these. Everybody loves these.
So, I know.
So let's make believe, let's like 200-employee organization in the state of Florida just for legal purposes, because I know other states are different. And then you have this one employee. That's a he is in charge of a project. That project is about to end. You're about to deliver the end of this project with a nice bow to the client in 4 days, right? This person has been the only person who's been holding this project together. Mm-hmm. This person's parent passes away.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you as a leader, now I know what I would do. Right. Because to me, you know what? Before I say what I would do, I just want to get your take.
Yeah, give me the answer, please.
No, I'll just get your take on it. So this person is about to deliver the most important project in your organization's history. I know I'm just laying it thick. I know I am, right? But now the person is about to, you know, bury, you know, his mom on the same day. Did you give him that day off? Did you give him some time off? Or did you say, hey, man, I'm sorry about your mom, but can you get this across the goal line first and then bury your mom? What do you do?
In those terms, exactly.
I know. It's horrible. It's horrible.
That's so bad.
Yeah.
Well, ideally, you have more than one person on the team that can do the things to get it across the finish line. We should be cross-training. We should be developing everyone's strengths so that we aren't relying on that one person to get this done and it's make or break for this client. And if not, I as a leader should at least know what needs to be done so that I can fill in for that person. Because if I'm leading my people, I better know generally how to get it done. So those are my first two thoughts. And like, if neither of those are true, we failed. And I would ask the client for an extension before asking him to complete that before his mom's funeral.
Okay, hold on.
Which I know that might not be the right answer, and maybe we'd lose the company a ton of money, and I'd get fired. But
well, wait a minute. Let me do the you know, the devil's advocate on the other side, because I agree with you. You're 100% right.
I wanted to know what your answer was going to be too.
Oh, I'm hooking up right now. So here's the thing, because I agree with you. If I cannot step in, or another person cannot step in, I failed my team.
Yeah.
I failed my team, because I should be able to develop this or put this team together in such a way where my employees, when the person in charge goes away for whatever reason, the second, it's like the mafia, right? Where, you know, they have an amazing succession planning. They really do. Right? I don't know if they do 9-box or not, right? But if the top person goes away, somebody steps up, right? So, I mean, I'm not saying you have to be a mobster, but what I'm saying is that you're right. If I was in charge of that team, I would be doing my team a disservice if I didn't spread the leadership wealth around. Right?
Right.
Now, so that's what I would do. At first, I would set it up to where, you know what? The most important thing right now is that person's mom.
Yeah.
Right? Go do what you got to do. We got this. We got this. Don't even call. Don't worry about this. You focus on you and your family alone. Now, a good employee is going to say, okay, and they're still going to call, right? They're still going to call like, Mike, we got this, dude. Take care of your family. But what if that couldn't happen, right? What does that say about you as the leader of that organization? If you could not do that, and then you go to the client and you tell the client, hey, here's what happened. And this was on me. I should have put some processes in place. That way we don't have to ask for an extension. I'm wondering, as a leader of the organization, what would you say if the client says, no, I'm not giving. I have deadlines to meet. Right? Because from a human perspective, you're like, how heartless. From a professional perspective, I'm like, oh, no, they got a point, right? They got things they got
to
meet.
And we have weeks to get this done.
Right?
I mean, I just hope I would never be in that situation. I would pull together as much as I could with my own skill set and the team's skill set. And if it's not up to par.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. So, okay. So, but yeah, that's what I would do. I would set up a process to where somebody else on my team will be able to step in. Worst case scenario, I'll do it, right? I'll step in. I'll do what I need to do. But the last thing I want to do is to have my employee worry about work when they should be with their family going through the grieving process.
And those are the things employees think of, like how we react as leaders during the birth of a child or the death of a loved one or a diagnosis. Like, that resonates with employees forever. I guarantee you, if you ask that person to come back before his mom's funeral, he will leave within probably as soon as he could, if not right away.
Well, it's so that story, that that hypothetical situation, it's not so hypothetical. I've actually seen that happen years in same organization as that director I told you about, where we had a brand new employee, very, very impressionable employee, right? This employee was always afraid. He was always walking on eggshells, right? About 9 months and 9 months into the role, right? And we had a leader that was brand spanking new, exactly how you said. They had no experience, right? This person's mom passed away, right? And this leader was behind the deadline that he was deathly afraid to say, I need an extension. This dude actually called the guy, not in a bad way. He's like, look, here's what's going on. Yeah, I know your mom passed away. Any way you can come in after the funeral. I mean, it's just so horrible, right, to hear. But the dude did it because he felt bad. The employee felt bad, Cassie. And he's like, yeah, I got it. And he was a very impersonal fellow. So anyway, I was so upset when I found out that I took that manager out to lunch because I could not cuss him out in the office. Right. I cannot. I took him to Dunkin' Donuts. Right. And I'm like, what?
The proper setting for a good.
Absolutely. Right. So, dude, and I'm like, hey, can I clock out real quick? He's like, yeah. What the F were you thinking? I mean, seriously, what were you thinking? Right. He's like,
that's a good point, too. Cause like how you treat one employee on the team affects everyone else on the team. Cause they see that happen. They're like, what happens when my family needs me?
Right. So people are watching, right? And kind of like the Blanchard management kit. I don't know if you've gone through that process. It is so cool. In the Blanchard management series, it says you as a leader, you're going to be a topic of conversation at dinner. Whether it's positive or negative is entirely up to you. <That's so true. laughs> Which is true, right? And you know other people because you know how rumors go. You know, other people saw that, like, man, did you see Mike had to come in? He still had his pamphlet, you know?
It's so terrible.
Oh, it was. Now, to the manager's credit, he did feel bad afterwards. And he probably said, Ricky, I just didn't know what to do. I was afraid. I didn't want to call you. I didn't want to call anybody. I'm like, no. Papa, you call me for this.
Yeah.
Because had you called me first, I would have said, leave Mike alone. Let him handle his stuff. You let me know what you need. We'll take care of this, but do not bother your employees. But
I bet there's so many people that aren't equipped to handle situations like that. Or an employee that comes to them and says, like, I just received a diagnosis. I'm depressed. I haven't been able to do my work the last few weeks.
And so if you had a hard-headed manager, it's like, you better go to happy hour, right? Go get some 5-hour energy, right? Take 4 of them. You got 20 there. You got 4 more for the whole day. But wait a minute. So that brings up a good point, right? So what you're saying is that any kind of leadership training, there has to be some form of emotional intelligence component within that training series. Right? I know that, but this is for every leader out there listening. One of the best tools you can pick up, whether it's a bookstore, if they're still around, or Amazon, is find any book on emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. I guarantee it. That book, that type, and I'm saying any book, not a specific one, just anything that teaches you to get in touch with your EQ, with your emotional intelligence, because that right there is going to help you connect with the humans that are working with you, working for you, and you're working for. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And then taking it a step further, I think something that either organizations can do or individuals can do is, I don't want to use the word mentor because that feels like so formal, but just be around other people that you see are really good leaders. Mm. Like, be around the leaders that you've seen prioritize humans over processes and budgets, and they're still very successful at work too.
Yeah. And you know what? And that's what I tell all my students also, Cassie, right? All of my students that are graduating, hey, Rick, what do you recommend? Okay. Go on LinkedIn, build relationships, and find somebody to shadow, right?
Yeah.
And by shadow, I mean have the person show you the good things about the job and the bad things about it as well, right? Everything. Perfect. That way you see.
An authentic leader will be happy to share both.
Say that again.
An authentic leader will be happy to share.
You got both that right. You got 100% right. So Cassie, so you tell me, for all the leaders out there right now, they're like, man, she makes a good point. What are 3 things they need to walk away with so leaders can go back? Now, remember, I'm big in application, right? Theory is great, but how I teach my classes over at Rollins is I like to teach the students, yes, the theory, but I want to see how it looks like on application. So for all the new leaders listening right now, what are 3 things you can give them today that they can implement immediately in their with their teams so they can focus on mental health at work?
I would say start with yourself. Let's take an honest look at yourself and say, am I in a place where I need to be with my mental and physical well-being? Because it's so integrated. Or are you finding that, I haven't been prioritizing sleep because I've been staying up watching Netflix, or I haven't been, I haven't sat down to process the stress that I'm going through, or I don't have a good mentor that I can really connect with and share some of the struggles that I'm having either personally or in managing your team. So I think it starts with ourselves because when we're managing our own selves better, we feel a lot more capable to lead everybody else.
Ooh, okay. So self-care first before you can focus on everybody else. Because the opposite is what's happening, right? People, especially HR. HR tend to focus on everybody else's issues except their own. Because we got issues, trust me.
They're never ending, so
They are
you don't
never.
have time to get to your own issues.
You want to know when I have an issue there, Cassie? Whenever I go to the Publix liquor store and she's like, "Hi, Ricky." I'm like, shit, she knows my name.
Gotta go to the other Publix for 6 months.
Can you imagine? I walk in there and there's a big poster, not a wanted poster. It's like, he likes Tito's vodka. Make sure you have it in stock.
Have it on the counter ready.
Right in the counter. Well, I mean, was that three of them you gave? Because I don't know.
I think that was just number one.
That was just number one. Sorry.
Well,
I promise I'm not having vodka right now. I promise.
you're giving me extra time to think of the other two,
All
so that
right.
works. Okay, my other like super tangible tip that I've found to be really helpful, because I manage a team of over 20 people right
Okay.
now. And one thing that I think has helped a lot is having bi-weekly 30-minute one-on-one check-ins and never canceling or rescheduling when possible.
Ooh.
Like, I don't miss a one-on-one because I have had, leaders in the past that have had to cancel repeatedly, and then all of a sudden you haven't had one-on-one time in 4 months. And it sends the message that, like, you're not important.
Yeah.
So I think prioritizing at least biweekly for my team, that's felt like the best cadence, that one-on-one session.
And you got 20 people?
Some of them are part-time, 8 full-time,
That's still a
and then,
lot.
yeah, it's kind of a lot. I need some, well, that's a topic for another day.
I mean, I'll give you the number to my Publix liquor lady. I mean, I can hook you up.
Okay, perfect. I don't mind Tito's either.
Hey, there you
That's a
go. That's perfect.
selection.
All right, so that's two, right? It's keep focusing on your one-on-ones with the team. I like that last piece when you said about don't cancel it, because God, you said that 4 month mark. I can't even imagine not talking to my team for four. I can imagine not talking to them for a week, let alone 4 months.
I know. I feel like literally it's the weirdest thing. I feel it in my gut when I'm getting close to their one-on-one because it's like, oh, I haven't talked with Melanie in a while.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, our one-on-one's tomorrow. Like, that makes sense.
Gotcha.
But we do have like weekly team meetings, so we're talking every week.
Okay.
But that focus time is so important.
So what's that third piece of advice?
So, to better support employee mental well-being, I would say as a leader, like, truly get to know your people. It takes a lot of energy, especially if you have a team of, 20 people, to know their pets' names, their kids' activities, what they're doing. If you need to write notes, if you need to have like a log in Excel somewhere of like, here's what's important to each person, here are the people in their lives, like, we have to know this stuff.
Yes.
It's the only way we can truly connect and that people truly feel seen and valued.
I cannot agree with you more, because yes, you are right. And look, I've always said this, you need two things to be a great leader: a backbone and people skills, right?
Yeah.
You need the backbone to have those difficult conversations you was talking about earlier, and you
Yeah.
need the people skills to be able to communicate that bad news in a way that the employee understands it. And I get it. It's difficult for people who are not, what's the word I'm looking for? That are an
Like
introvert.
non-confrontational.
No, or an introvert. They don't like to talk to people at all, right? So
It's gonna be
people,
hard to be a manager if you don't like talking to people.
I've met them. I have met them, because I'm looking at people. And I once had a client. It was a place that had nurses. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the nurses, talking to them, and I'm talking to the leader. And there's one nurse that I'm like, oh, she was so nasty to people and so mean to people. She's been there for 30 years, and I'm looking at the leader. I'm like, what are you going to do about so-and-so, man? I mean, it's almost like she saw the job description and she said, I'm going to do the exact opposite of every bullet point here. Like bedside manners non-existent in all those things. So I've seen people who are in these positions, right? And they're just not, they're not making the connections they need to. And remember, I said she was there for 30 years.
I was going to say, she's probably there because she was good at the technical part of her job, or she had the longevity with the organization, which it is difficult when, like, you have someone there 30 years, but then the person that's been there for 2 years shows the actual skills of being a manager and a leader.
Yeah.
It's difficult to make that decision of promoting someone who shows the skills over the person who's been there 100 years.
And what's that joke that people said? It's I don't know if I'm going to say this right. The best way to get an engineer, somebody who doesn't talk to people, the best way to get an engineer to quit is to promote them. Right?
That's because, awful.
Yeah, because I've seen that. I've seen people who are great at what they do.
Yeah.
And then they get promoted based on their technical ability, not looking into their interpersonal ability, and that's where they fail. So
okay, but I have a problem with that too, and I know we're almost done.
No, no, we're good. We're good.
Sometimes becoming the manager or leader is the only career path to make more money or move ahead in your career. So what do we do? Like, how can we create career paths for those individual contributors to acknowledge them from a financial perspective and a contribution perspective that doesn't require them to be a manager when they have no desire or skills to be a manager?
You're making me think. You're making me think.
Like, okay. I've literally had people tell me I want to be a manager because I want to make more money.
Okay, I got this. So, okay, so you're my employee. Let's make believe you're we're role playing. We're doing this off the cuff. Let's make believe you're my employee. Right.
Okay.
And you're telling me you want to make more money. You want to get promoted, but I know you don't have the skill set to be a great leader. Right.
But I'm really, really good at my job. Like, you can't afford to lose me from a technical perspective.
Got you. So here's my conversation that I will have with you on our regular one-on-ones that are not going to be every other month. It's going to be every other week. Right.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
In my conversation, I should be asking you, hey, Cassie, what do you want to do? What do you want to do, man? What motivates you? And if you tell me, well, Ricky, I want to make more money. I'm looking. I saw so-and-so left, right? She was managing 20 people, right? Mm-hmm. And I want that position. And if I know you're motivated by money, you're motivated to get there, but you don't have the skill set, it is my duty to give you that bad news. It is my duty to let you know, look, Cassie, I will help you as much as I can to make sure you get the money. But I think what we need to do here, we need to focus not on getting money. The money should be the byproduct. We need to focus on where you can thrive.
Yeah.
Where can you thrive?
That's so key.
Yeah.
How many of us don't know how to have that conversation? Because we were never taught. And it's difficult. It's difficult to welcome that conflict into a conversation.
Well, I mean, so that's why you have to build relationships. Right. If you build relationships from the get-go, from the very beginning of that person's employment, and you lay down that foundation, you should be able to have difficult conversations relatively easy.
For sure.
Right. So that's what I would do. I would tell you that I see what you're trying to do, but let's focus on getting you the skill set that will make you successful in that role. And trust me, the money will come. Trust me. And here's another thing that I would do. I would say, put yourself in my shoes. With everything that I just told you, would you promote yourself?
I love that.
Right? Forget the fact that you need money. Forget that. How well are you going to do at that job? Right?
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know if you'll say, well, hell yeah, Ricky, I'm going to do it.
No, you might get that.
Well, if they say that, I'm like, look, I don't see it. I don't see it, right? And look, I'd rather you walk out of this office upset with me because I told you the truth and happy because I lied to you, right? Yeah. So I will help you. Let's put a plan together. Not a pip. I got to be careful.
Very important distinction.
Let's put a plan together to where I can help you get there. But I need your commitment. All right, I'm going to commit to A, B, and C, but if I see that you start canceling meetings with me, I'm going to think you don't care about this as much as I do. And let me tell you, if I care about it more than you do, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Wait, did I say that right? If I care about it more than you. Did I say that right?
Right.
I did say that.
Yeah.
For some reason, I'm thinking, I said, if you care about it more than you do, which makes no sense.
You had it.
So anyway, that's what I would do, Cassie. It's because I've seen that happen, and I've had those conversations, especially when employees ask me for a raise. And people are not going to like this, but when they ask me for the raise and all the, because I ask them, well, help me understand why you should get paid more.
And my rent increased.
Rent increase, they got two kids or they're a single parent. And I'm like, I completely get all that. I completely understand. It's difficult out there for everybody. Let's talk about work, though. Right? What at work can you do that's above and beyond? And I've had those conversations.
And what have you done?
So, well, here's the thing. Back when I managed a team in corporate America, I never waited for them to ask me for a raise. Mm-hmm. I never waited. Now, if they ask me for a raise, either A, they're doing something that I have no idea they're doing because I don't know, or B, right, it's they have a completely different expectation of how much they should be getting mm-hmm. for the amount of money they're putting out. Mm-hmm. But if I wait, if I tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, I see what you've been doing. You've been doing mm-hmm. awesome. Here's a raise. How is that going to come across? Right?
Amazing.
Exactly, right? Versus saying, hey, and this is the worst thing, Cassie. It's because I know we're over, but it's okay. I'm loving this conversation. This is the worst thing, right? I tell my students, and you tell me if you do the same thing or not. I tell my students that if you get a job offer somewhere else and it's $10,000 more, and then you go to your boss and you ask to match it, mm-hmm. and they give it to you, I tell them to leave anyway.
Yeah.
Leave anyway. And people push back. Like, Ricky, why would you tell them? Because if you have the money to give to them and you feel they're valuable enough, but you didn't do it on your own, you were holding back until something happened and you've been shortchanging them the entire time. You showed your hand. So leave anyway. That's why I don't like to wait. I rather see it. I'm like, okay, if this person is worth, same thing if the person interviews, you could mm-hmm. tell they're worth 60 grand, but they're only asking for 40.
Right.
Give them the 60.
Yeah.
Give them the 60.
Like, how amazing would that be?
Right? Yeah. Give them the 60 because you can't treat people like an eBay item, right? Let's sell it to the highest bidder, regardless of what it is. So anyway, I'm going on a tangent. I apologize. You're supposed to be here as a guest. I shouldn't be blabbing here as much as I have, Cassie. You got to stop me.
It's the Tito's. It's okay.
I haven't had it yet. Winky, winky. All right. Well, hey, Cassie, thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming by, hanging out. Am I going to see you disrupt HR Jacksonville 3.0?
I think you might. We'll have to see.
All right. Well, remember, I'm going to be the host of the Jacksonville Annual Shroom Conference. April 11th. Tickets are still available. I'm going to have it on the summary. So are you going to that? Am I going to see you there?
I think so.
Okay.
If you'll be there, I'll be there.
I'll be there from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. because I'm the MC. So it's going to be fun. All right. Thank you for your time. Have a good one.
Thanks, Ricky.
All right, folks, I told you we have to start making mental health a priority in 2024 and beyond. It just needs to happen because at the end of the day, we do have human beings that are going through a lot when they're at home and even at work. So it's always a great idea to make sure that our most valuable asset, our human beings, our human talent, that we pay good money for that talent, by the way. Because remember, folks, if you had the skill set needed to move the needle from A to B in any kind of business, then you wouldn't need the employees. So you need employees to make that happen. And if you take care of what's important to them, they will definitely take care of what's important to you. So make sure you make mental health a priority in the workplace. Speaking of mental health, folks, do not forget the second annual mental health forum sponsored by GoSherm, happening here at in Orlando on Guidewell Innovation Center, 6555 Sanger Road in Orlando, Florida. That is on May 7th from 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. with a happy hour networking from 5 to 6 p.m. That is happening on May 7th. So for more information, go to GoSherm.org/events, and you'll find the information there. April Simpkins is going to be there talking about it. It's the same thing what Cassie was talking about, how to make mental health a priority in the workplace in 2024 and beyond. I'm going to be the MC for that event. So come see me, come see everybody else there. We are going to have a blast. And then a little bit earlier, April 11th, Sherm Jacksonville Annual Conference is going to be happening live over at the Everbank Stadium. That's on Thursday, April 11th. That is from 7:30 a.m. until 7 p.m. in Jacksonville. I am going to be the host for that event as well. You're going to have six amazing sessions helping you create an HR playbook to be able to help the organization move that needle from A to B, again, in 2024 and beyond. And folks, that said, that is our show for today. Thank you very much for listening. Drive safe. Good night.